This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Do you ever find yourself scrolling endlessly through streaming apps, overwhelmed by choice, only to land right back on a 2000s comfort show you've seen probably a dozen times before? Well, if you do, you're not alone. So why are we drawn back to them now? And what does it say about the way television and viewing has changed?
Gender, sexuality, and pop culture. There isn't much Lauren Rosewarne doesn't know. And if she doesn't, we'll make it
up. Good afternoon, Lauren Rosewarne.
Hello, Warren. Thanks for having me.
Why do you think so many of us are skipping the next best thing and going back to old favourites?
Look, there's a couple of reasons. This is first sort of came on the radar during COVID and lockdowns, where people were looking for comfort TV, things that they were familiar with, that they knew how it ended, and that there were a lot of episodes. That was seemingly really important, a lot of episodes. I think the other factor now, though, is there is a trend. I looked at this when I wrote about remaking, where every 25 years there tends to be a remake of a film. So it's always been on that generation cycle where 25 years passes and we get really interested in the popular culture of 25 years before then. And that's another explanation where, as alarming as it is, at that moment now, where the early 2000s are now a quarter of a century old.
I was just computing that in my head.
Yeah, we don't want to do the maths yet. But yeah, that's, and you see this in the sense of about 10 years ago, there was a trend where they were remaking things from the 1990s. And even now, there's still a bit of a legacy in pop culture where some 1990s themes are in, you know, there's a sort of TV series that have flashbacks to the 90s, because that's now the childhood of the directors of this era now.
That's quite scary. Let's think about it, though. I mean, we've got, I suppose, we've got social media now, haven't we? And people watching really, really short clips of things. Whereas if we go back in time before social media and streaming services as well, you know, we'd have to watch a TV show, wait another week for it to go. It's like the story was lengthened out and we could talk about it with people in between. I was much more into television back then than I am now, not just from a time perspective, but it was kind of part of the process of connecting with others.
Yeah, there's two things there. There's one, the sort of early 2000s is really the last years before social media. So that's, or at least social media in the form we think of it now. So this was a time where TV had a different hold on us. The other thing, though, is that episodic 1 week, one episode dropping per week. We weren't using the term dropping, but that idea, and also potentially
broadcast.
In a lot of... broadcast in sort of, if they were network series, it was 22 episodes. So you've got nearly half a year to feel connected to these shows. And I think that's another thing of sort of that anticipation and talking to friends between episodes just doesn't exist now. Unless, and some net streaming services still try and do it, where they'll do the one episode per week drop, but fans tend not to like it.
Has our, patience or attention span changed in terms of we no longer would be willing to wait a week, and we're just used to things being instant? If we get bored with it, we flick to the next thing. What's going on there?
Yeah, look, I must say, I feel this. If I see a show that's an Apple do this a lot with their shows, where it will be once a week, and I'll often think to myself, I'll just wait unless I need to talk about it on radio or something like that. I'll just wait until it all is all broadcast and watch it all together, because this idea of once a week, it feels very old-fashioned to me now. I can see, though, why, and Netflix have done it with the television show Wednesday. There's a few other examples where they'll split the season. So they'll show you the first, I think, four episodes, have a break, and then drop the next four as a way to kind of draw out this anticipation as well.
It's interesting. Someone showed me a clip today. It was on social media, and it was someone claiming that they're a nutrition expert, and they were, I can't remember the class, making some claim that if you freeze something, it becomes more nutritionally, you know, dense. It was a load of crap, absolute crap.
Right.
But it was presented professionally. And I thought to myself, wow, if we could go back to the 2000s where, I don't know, things things were perhaps checked before they were broadcast on TV, and now this person's out there spouting crap and people are following it and believing it and probably all going throwing things in the freezer and not making a difference.
Well, I think it's also because now the way to make content look really good, the bar is lowered. It's actually much cheaper and easier to do any of this kind of content now than ever before. So that really makes it a lot easier in terms of making slick productions. And this is actually YouTube is full of things that are very slickly made documentaries that people watch and think are full of facts and in fact are full of crap. And they're not going through the same kind of journalistic standards that we might have once expected. That doesn't mean it's not glorifying the past as though every production from the past was gospel, but there's just so much crap out there now, it is harder to wade through.
It is really hard, isn't it? Has the way, I suppose, TV is made today, just shorter seasons, cancellations, algorithms, has it, and we know that we can binge watch, has that changed, I suppose? When I say the experience for viewers, I'm sort of talking about the mental experience for viewers.
There's lots of layers to this. So one of the aspects is that you see, particularly streaming services, are very quick to axe a show. And this was not the case with network television. Seinfeld is often pointed to as the classic example that it took them something like 3 years to get a proper audience. Now, you Netflix and those streaming services would never pump resources into three seasons before there being a payoff. The money's not there. The other aspect of this is also no one really is making those shows that run for 6 months of the year. That is also something of the past as well. So this makes people nostalgic for shows like The Gilmore Girls or The OC or those really long running seasons that not only had sort of 22 episodes for a year, but there might be five or six seasons. So if you really want to have a mental health episode where you're just detaching from reality and watching TV content, the past is where all those shows are, whereas you're just not getting that volume anymore.
We're chatting with Lauren Rosewarne about why we're turning back to 2000s comfort TV and what it says about today's media landscape. Alex in St Kilda says, modern TV is too disposable. I don't want to fall in love with a show that gets canned after one season, which is, I suppose, true. That's what you were saying.
This is very much my dad's attitude because there's a show from a few years ago called Carnival. It doesn't matter in terms of the show itself specifically, but it only ever ran for two seasons and it ended without a proper finish. So after that, dad now will not emotionally invest in a show until he knows whether it gets a proper ending or not. Whereas I have resigned myself to the fact that shows are very likely to be axed, and that's okay if I enjoyed the viewing experience. But there is absolutely that lack of patience now on the part of networks. They don't want to wait to build an audience. The other aspect, though, to this story is also the risk aversion. And what I mean by that is networks and streaming services are much less likely to try something completely new and untested, because it's very expensive, and instead they kind of follow what the algorithms are giving us, and we kind of get more lookalike content because the assumption is we want more of it.
More the same is boring. We want diversity. Now, Jordan in Brunswick says, streaming ruined TV. Everything is bingeable but forgettable. That's interesting.
Look, this is difficult to say because on one of those, part of this nostalgia of the early 2000s television is often when it's kind of considered to be what's called prestige TV. It was the era that gave us The Sopranos, you know, Breaking Bad, The Wire, shows that are often on people's list of greatest shows ever. And I think part of that has got to do with the passing of time. You know, we tend to idealize things from the past. I think there have been some good shows on streaming services, but the problem is the percentage-wise, the hit rate is low. Right? There's a lot of content because, after all, there are so many platforms desperately needing content, and most of it is not great, and it is also made at a much lower production value because there's not the same money in TV anymore than there once was, because these companies are not selling advertising anymore. They're selling on a subscription platform, a subscription model, sorry, which means there's just less money in the kitty to spend on shows.
Lauren, Sophie in Northcote's got a really good point. Sophie says, I miss the ritual of waiting a week for the next episode. It built excitement. I mean, that's true, isn't it? Because you sustained that excitement for a week. I mean, that must have a positive effect on us.
So the network that aired White Lotus, I think it was Hulu, but it might have been another one, they did single episodes per week this year as a trial, as a kind of way to see whether, because it's not just the anticipation for individual audience members, which is part of this story, but the other is also keeping the cultural conversation going. So what they want you to do is if you binge a whole Netflix show in one weekend, no one's talking about it the following week. And it's that networks want to harness. They want to harness the continued chatter. And the only way they can do that is forcing a discipline of a week between shows. Audiences still find it frustrating, but evidently some people find pleasure in it. I find it frustrating, I must say, but that's because obviously I've been trained now to, you know, want everything on demand instantly right now.
Hot topic we've got here, Lauren, because Tommy Footscray Scott says, it's not nostalgia, it's survival. I need something reliable when the world feels chaotic. Now, just on that, I suppose, are we craving reliability, Lauren, in an unpredictable world?
Yeah, look, when I remember this was something very much spoken about during the COVID lockdowns, that the networks were looking at what people were accessing in terms of content, and it was very much comfort TV. And looking back, I actually saw myself, and I'm not someone who normally would watch sitcoms for leisure, but I found myself watching old episodes of Community, and I can tie that straight away to a point where I remember seeing on the news makeshift morgues in the UK during COVID, and it was just too upsetting to keep watching the news. And it's funny that you look back on that and think, oh, that sounded a bit mad, but it wasn't at the time. And I think even now there are some people who crave, their primary reason for watching TV is escapism, and therefore there are only certain kinds of shows that provide that, and it's not necessarily the same thing that streaming services are offering.
Just follow on to that, we've got this one from Claire in Docklands. Comfort TV is like comfort food, predictable, warm and safe. Maybe that's what it comes down to, Lauren.
But then why do I always go to, like, episodes of Forensic Files and Dateline, Lauren, for comfort? I mean, what does that say about me?
That's next week's topic.
That's next week when we only do the live counselling session.
That's right. Lauren, love chatting with you. We'll catch you next week.
I look forward to it. Thanks, Lauren.
That's Associate Professor Lauren Rosewarne from the University of Melbourne.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.